hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Tito Santana.
This is Kurt Angle.
This is Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is going out to Scott and Holly.
You are listening to the
Win Twice Wrestling Podcast
with Scott and Holly.
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
And this holds for everybody. Ho!
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast alongside your hosts, Scott and Holly.
Hello.
How you doing, Holly?
I am good.
Are you raring to go for this one?
I'm so raring.
I feel like there's a lot of anticipation for this because I, as we know, I tend to, if it's going to be a shit show, as in not a recording, I mean, I'll let the people decide that.
Okay.
But when it's a show that we're reviewing that I don't think's good or has few redeeming qualities,
yes,
I'll try and give you a heads up.
Yes.
As a courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that on this one.
No, you fucking didn't.
Because I thought it was so bad,
mm-hmm,
from the bits I knew of it. And I'll be honest, I haven't seen this thing through before. I've seen bits and pieces from it, but not everything.
Okay.
And I didn't want to put myself in a bad headspace by kind of saying that to you already. And I thought we'd get some more genuine reactions from when you didn't have anything, any bar to set it with. So the show that we're covering for this episode, so this will be released during September when I'm away, so we're doing this a little bit ahead of time, but we're trying to get a few of these in the bank so we don't miss out on a week. And you may have noticed this will sound weird because it's out of sync time-wise, but there was a gap between, there was a two-week gap between episodes being released. That's because I had computer issues at the time and it conked out on us halfway through a recording, so I had to get that sorted, but hopefully you won't have noticed in the recording itself. But we're trying to bank a few of these, so again we've gone with shorter shows, so there'll be a couple of times where we can get two recordings in the week. And we already covered the first ever episode of this show.
Mm-hmm.
We're now going on to the second, and that show in question, Holly, is the WWF Saturday Night's main event from the 5th of October, 1985.
Yes.
So, again, taking us back to the early days of around WrestleMania 1. This obviously took place after that event.
Mm-hmm.
Getting us re-familiarised with some of the characters.
Oh, and I'm so glad to see some of them again.
From the era. Not all of them.
No, some of them I'm really happy to see again.
Yes, and others less so, shall we say. Mm-hmm. So the date for this event was actually, it was done on the 3rd of October 1985, but it aired on the 5th. The venue was the Meadowlands Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Attendance on the night was 8,000, and you could actually see in the arena, there was in the top bowl specifically, there were quite a few spare seats. But the atmosphere was still very good, I'll give it credit.
How? But yeah.
Fair enough. And the TV rating was, again, an impressive 8.3. I think the first one was high about 8.8, so it'd come down a little bit from then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the matches on paper that were on this card, granted the order is absolutely diabolical,
yes,
but I understand why they had to do that to an extent.
Sure.
This set of matches is more interesting than the ones that they showed us at the first event, I think.
Oh, you'd think.
You'd think. You'd be sorely mistaken.
I'm really trying to not just be immediately fucking angry, but I really can't help it.
You do you, boo. But with this show,
yes,
because we really haven't discussed anything about it other than the fact that I think I just sent you a message after I finished it saying, fuck this show.
Yes, and I gave you nothing.
You gave me absolutely nothing.
Nada.
Although I know damn well what you would think about this show.
Don't know what you mean.
I'm a couple bits that
of sunshine.
A couple of bits that I knew for sure took place.
Okay.
Was the certain ceremony that we see on this show.
Yeah.
And I think I'm familiar with the match between Piper and Orndorff.
Okay.
I don't think any of the other matches I'd seen footage of before.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure I'd seen that to a certain point, specifically the towards the end of the match and what happens there.
Sure.
Again, I was, I don't want to say optimistic because I really wasn't, but I was hoping that there'd be, you know, things that we can glom onto and take away as being, oh, do you know what? It was crap,
but this was
all right.
All right, yeah.
There might be a moment too much. In fact, there are. There are, but they're not enough to counterbalance what we see on this show.
Right.
Is that a fair way to set the table for this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I feel like we're going to get some very colourful language out of a young Holly.
Young?
Yeah.
All right.
I know where my bread's buttered.
Gosh, take that.
Well, it's my birthday coming up, so got to be nice. So, Holly.
Yes.
As we make our way through the history of Saturday night's main event, we're going to see some dross. I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keeping in mind, I'm writing this ahead of watching the show. I'm aware there are a couple of absolute stinkers on the second edition of the show, but chose not to give you a warning ahead of time, as I thought that would give your unbridled rage full blossom.
Unbridled rage?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Good. Yeah, yeah, fine.
This will likely seem a touch out of sync, but we're recording these episodes ahead of time, as there are a few weeks where both Holly and I are away, and wherever possible, we don't want to skip a week unless we have no other choice but to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to skip the usual bit of what caught your eye in the world of professional wrestling, because this will mean effectively nothing by the time it gets released.
Exactly.
Not, I mean, to be fair, there'll be people that will listen back to episodes when long after we've recorded it, but it just didn't seem to make much sense to us to do it for this particular part here.
No.
So we'll go straight into the show opening. Previously, from the last episode where we've covered Saturday night's main event, I already kind of laid the groundwork of how it came to be with
you
NBC,
did.
Dick Ebersole, and obviously then Rock and Wrestling, WrestleMania, etc. So we were very much in the full swing of that. The show starts with a very familiar backdrop, as it looks almost a carbon copy of the first edition of the show, as we see Mean Gene in his beautiful tuxedo standing with his back to the crowd at the entryway. As you recall last time, I actually thought that was a green screen that they were standing in front
of,
but it's not, so I didn't make that assumption this time. Alongside him stand classy Freddie Blassie and Nikolai Volkov in full military trench coat, fur hat and hammer and sickle flag in hand. Both men look extremely pissed off. Oh, they won't be the only ones that are pissed off during this, I'll tell you that. Mean Gene informs us that we may be on the brink of an international crisis, and that Hulk Hogan told him after his title defence tonight the Soviet flag would never be allowed to be waved in arenas in the United States. Although I assume that means in other buildings and stadiums it's seen as fair game then.
Yeah.
Just arenas. We can't have that waving in.
Got to be specific.
Oh, exactly. And I'm a pedantic arsehole, as you know. Nikolai now delivers one of the most spectacular pieces of nonsense I've heard so far during the podcast. Tonight, I will be forever a title and take belt back to Russia. And then if anyone comes to new country, I have no conscience and pull missile buttle and destroy you oil all. I refrained from doing the accent for many reasons
thank
there.
You.
Honest to God, that's the best I can make it after three attempts of listening.
Oh.
Word for word, pretty much what he says there. I get the gist of what he's saying, but it's absolute pish. And I'll be honest, other than I had to rewind it three times, because it's so bad, it became funny.
Okay.
And there's a few moments
not
like
as,
that.
Not as, nothing yet has been as funny as Carly and the Kiss Girl.
Well, I don't know if we're going to have anything break that for you on this one, I'll be honest. How Gene keeps his shit together after that, I will never know, but he now turns to Blassie and asks what he thinks of that. Freddie warns his fellow Americans, this man always means what he says. With that being the case, he means absolute verbal garbage. Hogan promo.
Oh.
We now get a PowerPoint slide transition to Hulk Hogan standing holding the microphone in the same position where a white vest... We'll do that bit again.
Okay.
So he was there, he was holding the microphone in the same place that they were, and he was wearing a white vest that reads American Made.
Yes.
His bandana, however, is such a mess that it looks like he's trying to join a gang on the streets of Compton.
This is the only point I've fucking written about this. Why is it so squiffy? Like,
squiffy?
Squiffy.
That's the most British phrase.
Like,
squiffy.
Skewiff. Like,
yeah.
What I thought initially, I thought, oh, I wonder if he's got like... an injury, like maybe he's got some stitches somewhere and he's trying to...
No, brother.
Fucking idiot.
Yep.
Fucking idiot.
Yeah, he gets to put it in his mouth later, though, so...
I said this before, I say it again. How does he look 90 years old here, but when we go through the years, we see him and he looks younger? Like, this is awful. Awful. Sorry, I can't.
I asked you later about Hogan when he's having his match, so spoiler alert, there's a Hogan match on this card. Hogan tells his fellow Americans out there to rest easy, as he's here and Nikolai Volkov poses no threat to him or to America. He says that stinky Russian has gotten him red hot about the whole situation, seeing him wave the Russian flag in front of all the American kids. After tonight, when Hulkamania is through running wild, there will be only one flag waving, and that will be the red, white, and blue. Just for me, apparently. Because he wants to rhyme it. He says, just for you. Like, oh, I don't care. Union Jack? What do you mean, red, white, and blue? What
could
are you waving?
Could be French.
Mean Gene with Hillbilly Jim and Uncle Elmer.
This can get in the fucking bin.
Mean Gene says that he's now standing in the reception area for the upcoming wedding, which will be a first on network television since Miss Vicky, although it sounded like Miss Piggy, which is what I initially wrote and then came back about half an hour into the show and changed it, and Tiny Tim. I think you said Tiny Tim.
It is, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it is.
And I can feel the air come out of Holly as she hears this, especially seeing Uncle Elmer's form on screen.
Right.
I'm just going to sit back for this bit, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll come back to this later, right? But, so, how do I fucking start this? I have never in my life watched a WWE, WWF, wrestling in fucking general segment that includes a fucking wedding where I give a shit.
There's one that you might.
If you're going to tell me it's the Savage thing, I haven't seen that. So therefore, that is exempt at the moment.
Of course, that's the one I'm referring to.
However, all the fucking others, I don't give a shit. So I saw this and I also thought, great, I'm not going to give a fuck about this. Don't get me wrong. Deep down, I'm a little bit of a romantic.
She's a softie.
I am. But this is not the one. This is not the one.
Well, okay, so on that one, we'll end the episode here, I think, because
I'll be honest,
doesn't get any better. Best man Hillbilly Jim says that he hopes everything is ready, as first Uncle Elmer is going to wrestle.
Great.
I can now hear Holly boo. Then he's going to get married. Those boos have gotten louder. And then it's going to be a big old reception party. She's asleep.
Too angry for fucking sleeping.
Passed out with rage. Mean Gene lies to their faces by saying it sounds like a good time before asking Uncle Elmer if he's nervous. Elmer says he's a man on a mission of love, but is quickly interrupted by Piper.
Ugh.
And he immediately makes me laugh by saying, "You're on a mission, brother. If you were a mission, you'd be the launching pad. Look at this guy. You think she's getting any kind of bumps in the basement?"
It's so ridiculous.
I thought that was fucking excellent by Piper.
It is funny.
As Piper continues to insult Elmer, the music grows louder and louder to drown him out before we get the Saturday night's main event video introduction, which is still lovely and oh so 80s.
Now for me, you're about to see or listen to the highlight of the whole entire thing for me. And this is it.
Live in the arena, the voice of Vince McMahon. Well, I didn't know you were such a big fan of Vince.
Oh, it's coming, don't you worry.
I bet it is. The voice of Vince McMahon welcomes us to the Meadowlands Arena in the shadow of New York City and tells us that we will see the first defence of Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus the Barber Beefcake, although it's not yet the Barber, as they look to defend their tag titles against Tony Garea and Leaping Lanny Poffo.
Cool.
Vince has a thing about not liking to say they're in New Jersey and will always instead make a reference to being near or adjacent to New York instead. New Jersey just doesn't have the same allure and pageantry of the Big Apple, but I've never heard him say New Jersey.
So weird.
It's always, oh, it's basically New York. Well, it's not though, is it?
Well, no.
We will also see Paul Orndorff test his skills against Rowdy Roddy Piper, as well as Andre the Giant teaming up with Tony Atlas against King Kong Omelette and Big John Studd.
Yay, can't fucking wait.
Vince now tells us that we will see something a little different, as Uncle Elmer will be getting married.
Just kill me.
As angry as Holly just got for all of that, her heart is now happy as the camera pans over to the violet suit wearing Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah.
Now, Holly, talk me through this outfit and specifically those black and yellow sunglasses he has on, please.
I fucking love Jesse. We know this. That outfit is spectacular. But the glasses upset me a little bit because they don't go with the rest of this outfit.
They're shite.
They are shite. I feel like he's forgotten the ones that he's meant to have with them and just put those on instead.
I'm going to be presumptuous here. So you've got a segment in each one of your shows.
Right.
Shall we just kick that into touch now? Or do you want to save it to the end?
Hang on, let me scroll and see if I actually mention anyone else. I didn't mention other people.
Okay, fine, we'll leave it to the end. But I'm pretty sure I know where this one's going to land.
Okay.
Jess says maybe Vince can wake him up when it's all over, and Holly has never been happier and more aroused to hear Jess take a page out of her book. He says that the marriage has no place on a wrestling show. Mm-hmm. Wrestling is a contact sport, and you don't have to sell him on the wrestling. First match of the evening. What a weird choice to open the show with. Nikolai Volkoff with classy Freddie Blassie versus Hulk Hogan for the WWF title.
Yeah, why is this first?
Because Hogan's involved later on and it doesn't make sense for him to be there and sweaty.
I know, but still, this is so weird.
But if you remember from Saturday night's main event, the first episode, he didn't headline the show there either. He went on about halfway through.
True.
So he hasn't yet actually main evented one, although fair. Later on we learned that he might be headlining the third edition. You need to contain your excitement, young lady.
I can't with this.
We finally head to the ring where we see Freddie Blassie waving the Soviet flag and Nikolai Volkoff serenades us with the national anthem. Holly, I don't know about you, but I'm stunned it wasn't cut off by Mr. Hogan's theme music.
Yes, me too, actually.
As Nikolai finishes, he yells at the typical American fans for having no class as they booed him throughout, and we even heard a couple of air horns during the performance. Don't.
Honestly.
Don't. Who gave him a fucking air horn?
It comes a bit later on where I lose my shit with the fucking
air horn. I can tell you exactly when it will be. Was Jesse in the ring by any chance? Yes. Yeah, of course he was. As the challenger waits in the ring, we see a number of pieces of garbage get pelted into the ring, and that is some classic 1980s heat right there.
Yeah.
We quickly learn why Hogan's music didn't interrupt the Soviet anthem, as he's standing with Mean Gene in the entryway carrying the American flag.
Mm-hmm.
Mean Gene asks Hogan what he thinks of Volkoff singing the national anthem and carrying the Russian flag. The Hulkster says it's the absolute limit, and he hates seeing the enemy's flag being carried around in the ring, so that is why he has brought the Stars and Stripes, which he declares will fly forever. We now see Hogan make his way to the ring with Old Glory waving high above him to patriotic music and not the classic Real American theme.
I know.
He's not there yet. He's not there yet.
Well, I figured as much, purely because he's wearing white and not yellow.
But actually, if you think, though, WrestleMania 1, which had already taken place, he wore yellow.
Yeah, but it confused me immensely.
Funny you should say that at that particular moment. Holly, what do you think of Hogan wearing white trunks and a white vest as opposed to his usual red and yellow ensemble?
No.
I think it's fine.
I
get bored of it.
It's just what
yellow.
I'm used to.
Yeah, but I get bored of it. It's nice to see a bit of a mix-up. As both men are standing in the ring, we see it's clearly a pissing contest as the Soviet flag is much smaller than that of the US and therefore America has the biggest penis and wins by default. I'm not having that wasn't intentional. That was 100% intentional.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
As Hogan passes the flag over the ropes to the outside, Volkoff is quick to leap to action and attacks the champion from behind. A furious bell signals the start to the contest and Nikolai gives the Hulkster a tour of the top turnbuckles before tearing the champion's shirt off. He didn't even get to do it himself.
I know.
You're getting everything stolen away from you in this one. Quite literally. Volkoff now chokes him with the torn top as the referee implores him to stop before disqualification. Back on their feet, and Nikolai looks to run Hogan into the third top turnbuckle, but the Hulkster blocks it and rams Volkoff into the padding instead. Big right hands from the champion, who follows with a corner whip and clothesline, dropping the challenger. Hogan takes a moment to fire up the crowd, who are incredibly loud, before he appears to spit in the direction of Volkoff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you saw that as well then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. He pulls him back to his feet to deliver a couple of clubbing rights, and we now get the Axe Bomber running lariat and elbow drop. More pandering to the crowd from Hogan, who delivers two headbutts to Volkoff before a right hand puts him to the canvas. Jess also notes that he'd never seen Hogan have to use headbutts before, so it's something new to him.
Yeah.
Whip off the ropes, and a chest-high boot sends the Russian over the top and onto the apron, from where he very slowly falls onto the ringside table, and we hear the ring bell sound.
Yeah. It did make me chuckle.
You enjoyed that?
I actually did.
Hogan has followed him out there, and Volkoff goes face-first into the ring apron. But as he tries to use Nikolai's head as a battering ram, the challenger shoves him off and Hogan himself eats the ring post.
Oh, take a big ass drink, because this is ridiculous.
Back in the ring, and Volkoff is in the ascendancy as he clubs at the back of Hogan before stamping on him for good measure. From the second rope, Nikolai connects with a double axe handle to the back and hits him in the throat before a headbutt rounds things off. Now, what we see next from the challenger is genuinely impressive as he scoops Hogan up, then carries him horizontally before parrying him over his head. And in spite of the monster wedgie this gives the Hulkster, I don't believe I've ever seen this happen to the champ before.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, that's really
fair.
Good.
That is fair.
Really good. A few times, by the way, it auto-corrected Volkoff to Volvo. So if I ever say Volvo at some point.
Okay.
Although here it looks like it says Volavon.
I love a Volavon.
What would you have in a Volavon?
Mushroom.
Like, oh, okay.
A creamy mushroom Volavon.
Okay, so do you know, this is weird, but in primary school, I remember as one of the...
How posh are you? Volavons in primary school?
Hang on.
Fucking hell.
Okay. So oftentimes they'd do like, they'd have a meat of choice. And if I didn't like the meat, and for like any veggie kids, although vegetarianism didn't feel like a thing when I was a kid personally, they had like, they had to do a veggie option. Yeah. And it was Volavon with grated cheese in. And that sounds really underwhelming.
Basic.
But I tell you what, and I've never had it since, and it excites me the thought of it, I'm like salivating a little bit, is if it was like, let's say, a roast type meal, you'd still get all the trimmings. I know you're not a fan. Yeah, fine. You'd still get all the trimmings with it. But then when the gravy melts the cheese in the Volavon, now it's a party.
Okay.
Now it's a, and to the point where I think about that to this day. And we're talking like, because so, I eventually went to packed lunches. So this is year three. So I'd have been seven.
My God, wow. Why don't you recreate that? Why don't you just
Volavons? Where the fuck do you buy a Volavon from?
You shop in M&S. You're posh. You,
I'm
sure
they
sell
them. I've
never
seen Volavons for sale.
Right.
They've already got like pre-stuffed.
Hey.
Hey, hello.
Hey.
Hello, Tiger.
Okay, fair enough.
But honestly, the milk... Oh, happy days.
Can we just sit and talk about food instead of this?
I will try and get it. Oh, don't worry. There's a King Kong Bundy match. I'd be mentioning food.
Great.
I'd be mentioning food.
Okay.
From the second rope, Nikolai Volkov connects with her. We've already done that. Volkov eventually brings Hogan crashing down until it hurts inside over his knee. And if he hadn't wasted so much time before the cover, he could have gotten the three count. I like the delayed
laughter. Sorry, it was a delay. My little brain's ticking over. I'm still thinking about fucking Volavons.
Strong corner whip sees Hulk collapse after hitting the buckles, and Volkov is quick to capitalise with a stomp to the lower abdomen. Volkov looks to be attempting a pile driver, but is having difficulty with elevating the champion, and Hogan powers him up with a back body drop. The fans are alive once more as Nikolai runs into a punch to the stomach, make that two. But Volkov hits on the third attempt and once again continues the beatdown of the Hulkster, ending with a big body slam that gets a near fall. Not only does Hulk kick out, he powers out and starts shaking his head violently from left to right as his arms go up and down rapidly. Someone's excited. Nikolai tries to club away, but it has no effect on the Hulkster, who returns to his feet and fires off a number of rights. You didn't get the no, no, no bit.
No, I know.
No, the no-no-no bit, not the no-I-know bit.
No, no, no.
Reversal of a corner whip sees Hogan hit the buckles, but he sidesteps the charge of Volkov and the Russian hits the ring post headfirst.
Oh, drink.
Drink. Your heart's not in it.
It's not.
Nikolai stumbles backwards and hits the canvas, allowing Hogan to drop the leg and earn the 1, 2, 3, successfully defending his title.
Mm-hmm.
As the bell sounds, Hogan grabs the Soviet flag and spits on it. Before cleaning his boots, and I'm now uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Jess is sounding off on comms about how wrong and disrespectful that is, and I have to agree with him. Never liked flags getting involved in wrestling. It always felt cheap.
Yeah, no, not a fan.
The Hulkster teases ripping it in two, but thankfully doesn't, instead throwing it into a heap in the ring and spitting on it once more. Hogan now grabs Old Glory and celebrates his win by cupping his ears to the fans as the US flag waves high above before grabbing the WWF title as the announcement from Finkel is made.
Mm-hmm.
Holly, what did you think of the match and what did you score it?
Well, I did give it some points because there was one or two moments where I thought, oh, that's all right. And it did make me laugh. The effective crawl onto the timekeeper's table, it just made me chuckle. I gave it 1.5 out of 5 and most of that, I mean, it's fucking high. But most of, no, why you should, don't fuck with me. What? Tell me now.
I gave it 2.5.
That's ridiculous.
And ridiculous is yes. Ultimate Warrior.
All
okay.
right, go move on.
So, and I'll tell you why I gave it 2.5 stars.
Okay, please.
Because it was fine.
Please do.
It was fine. I thought there were some really good moments in there with Volkov powerlifting Hogan up.
Yes.
Hogan didn't just completely run roughshod over the whole thing. It was a good length. There was nothing in there that I went, oh, fuck's
You've
sake.
Really tried to find good points here, though.
I'll be honest, this is the only one I find
good bits in.
So,
okay.
Rest assured, but I thought I was going to shit on it, and I went, do you know what, actually, it was fine.
It was fine.
2.5. I don't hate your score.
No,
but
I just don't care.
I think mine's all right.
Also, it was quite nice having Jesse back in my ears. I'll be honest.
In your what?
Ears.
What
do you think I said?
No, I didn't think you said rears.
Oh, well, that makes no sense.
Well, I don't know. Whatever you do in your spare time thinking about Jesse, I couldn't say.
Shut up.
You see, he's come back. WWE?
Yeah.
Pleasing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't want to say we lit the way for him there, but we certainly got a cameo with him talking about wrestling. And from all the other cameos I saw he got, none of them were talking about wrestling. Yeah. And now he's back in the WWE, so that is not us, but I will be claiming it as such.
Okay.
Mean Gene interviews a victorious Hulk Hogan. After returning from the commercial break, well, why anything? Let's be fair, why anything?
I'm really trying, but I'm really struggling.
After returning from the commercial break, we see Mean Gene standing in the entryway once more with the defending WWF champion, Hulk Hogan. Gene asks if Hulk thinks Volkov learned his lesson after tasting defeat. The Hulkster says, if you live this thing day in and day out like the Hulksters do, you understand that the red, white and blue will fly forever. But Volkov didn't get that message. Next time, Hogan will explain it to him a little bit slower, baby doll.
The only part of that I enjoy? The fact he calls him baby doll. I like that.
Gene now mentions the big wedding, which Hogan is going to attend. And Hulk is pleased to be able to have a bit of a relaxation after his win. And this will show that wrestlers are nice people too. No, they're not, Terry. Don't lie. Hogan is really excited though, as he heard Gene will be playing the keyboard at the wedding, and Oakland responds with, I'll be playing the organ, I guess, which I believe he actually means his cock, and that was a threatening to be a real party.
What?
He says, oh, I'll be playing with my organ.
I missed that completely.
Oh, it's not the only one he makes as well, there's a few
of
them. Oh,
I've definitely missed them then.
It was good. As Gene sends it back to Vince, Hogan flexes his bicep and Gene cries, oh my, and wow, as we now see a wedding dress on screen.
Yes, we do.
In the dress is the poor cow that will be marrying Elmer, and to be honest, an actual cow might have been more preferable to the farmer. Vince goes to ask Jess a question, but he reminds Vince he has no interest in any of this, but then cuts himself off mid-sentence as the fashionista spots that the dress may be slightly off-white, and I chuckle.
Yeah, it is.
Because I have no interest in this, and hang on. Like, it's really good.
Yeah.
Mean Gene with the Hillbilly Clan. Brace yourself, Holly. Are you strapped in?
Yeah, fine.
Okay. Back to the entryway, and now Gene is surrounded by the world's largest bluegrass band you're ever likely to see. The irony that there was an actual bluegrass band later on.
Stop.
Gene asks if Elmer is more worried about the romance or the wrestling. And Elmer says he isn't worried at all, unless there is no food on the table.
Mm.
I may have added that last bit myself.
I thought you might.
Gene says that is good and turns to Hillbilly Jim and points at the goofiest cousin fucker I've seen on any of these shows.
Wow.
Which is fitting, as here we see Cousin Junior. I put cousin fucking before I heard his name was Cousin Junior, by the way. Now, here is a man that has humped every branch of the family tree, dear Christ. Look at him!
Ooh.
Look at him!
Wow.
Come on now.
I'm
aware he's playing a character, of but fuck me.
Plays it well.
Fuck me. I'm surprised he doesn't have gills. Honestly. Apart from Norwich, was he from again? I couldn't remember.
Stop.
Too far?
No.
Not far enough?
No, stop it.
Okay, fine. Hillbilly Jim, who has kind eyes, and answers Gene's question about nerves by saying, what does the greatest wrestler in the WWF have to fear? Nothing. Who the fuck are you referring to? Elmer?
Yeah, who is he?
You out your goddamn fucking little mind.
I'm so confused.
Soft in the head. That's ridiculous.
That's stupid.
No, Gene, do not engage with Junior. He's engaged with Junior. He asks Junior if he'll be dancing tonight, and Junior confirms that sadly this will be the case like always. Gentleman Jerry Valiant versus Uncle Elmer with... You're right there, do you need to pick up the pieces?
No, sorry. That's really tickled me.
With Hillbilly Jim and Cousin Junior. And then he put Cousin Fucker as well. We now go back to the ring, and a dad from the crowd has come in full kit wanker mode, as he's wearing a singlet and a ring jacket. No, sorry, I'm told this is Gentleman Jerry Valiant. As Uncle Elmer and the dungaree duo make their way to the ring, the sheer size of Elmer is almost overwhelming.
Sorry, I can't. Oh, gosh.
You're actually crying?
Oh, funny.
I don't actually know what got you there.
Just the whole fucking thing.
Brilliant.
Oh, right, okay, I'm back in the ring.
We're good. They hit the ring, and the man who has been kicked in the head by a horse more times than he has had hot meals starts dancing with no shoes. Now they do-si-do, and I no longer know what wrestling is.
So shit. So shit.
Jim hugs Elmer for good luck and takes his leave, allowing Valiant to charge at the big farmer, only to be body slammed hard. The big lump clambers on top, and in spite of Valiant still very much trying to, he's unable to shift the form of Elmer off of him, and the ref counts three. If Full Kit Wanker can't get him off, I don't fancy his wife's chances in the sack when they consummate the marriage later on. Valiant cannot believe he has lost, and Elmer hugs his entourage in celebration.
Good.
Vince on comms says that this has to be some kind of record, and moments later, Finkel confirms this has set a new record for the WWF as the fall took only 6 seconds. Jess is quick to call out the previous record, which stood at 9 seconds and was held by King Kong Bundy. Remember that, Holly?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
WrestleMania 1? No? Okay.
No, I do, actually, because I remember Googling it and being like, actually,
well,
it was.
Okay, let's carry on. More shite dancing unfolds in the ring, but we are now shown a video package. Holly, what did you score this match? And if the answer is 0 stars, that's the only acceptable answer, and you are correct.
Of course it's fucking nothing.
0 stars. That's what do you think?
This is utter fucking shit.
No. So what you really think?
Honestly, this is one of... Oh, I'm trying to think of others, but this might be my least... It's not even saying least favourite. This is just the worst thing I've fucking seen. It's an absolute fucking joke. Joke.
I'm glad I brought a little bit of levity with the humorous comments there, but it was awful.
Fucking stupid.
The video package I was referring to is the entirety of that WrestleMania 1 match with King Kong Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of the former record, we see the entirety of that match as King Kong Bundy crushed SD Jones at WrestleMania 1. To be clear, that was much longer than 9 seconds.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Mean Gene with Elmer et al. Gene asks Elmer what he thinks of setting the record, and the big lad says, "You know what? He should have never taken his gosh dang coat off if he wasn't planning on staying."
God.
Mean Gene tries to pop the crew as he asks Elmer if he plans on breaking another record later on, and the dumb goof that he is, Elmer says he doesn't know, but he'll try.
It's so bad that it's funny.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, God.
Even the shit episodes give us something.
Oh.
As we go back to the voice of Vince McMahon, we see Arnold Schwarzenegger sat in the crowd, and we're informed that he has been enjoying the festivities. That makes someone.
Is he?
That makes one person.
Really?
We now go to a special segment.
We do.
And it's called The Body Shop.
Yeah.
We now go to a segment known as The Body Shop. And Holly, I had no idea that Jess was the man behind the UK retail outlet.
Yep.
Although the one thing that signifies it's a body shop is they've got those jacks that carry the weights of things.
Yeah.
That's the only... Oh, because then he's got nothing to do with cars. What are we talking about?
I thought it was body, because I'm pretty sure there's a pair of dumbbells in the ring.
Was there? Oh, I only just saw
and the... And maybe like a... A bench.
How did I miss that? I just saw like those.
I tell you how you missed it. Fucking foghorn, continuously going off. Maybe. I'm really sorry. I've literally done nothing but swear, and it's very unbecoming. Unbecoming of me. But that's what I meant by a body shop, because it's Jesse the Body.
Yeah, well, I know it's Jesse the Body, but to me,
so his body.
Yeah,
like...
I get it, but I didn't understand why they had those like put boxes on and you carry them around. I've seen them work in like. Car body shops when they're carrying heavy parts of the
car.
Okay. So I was like, well, maybe they just have everything to do with the body. I'm surprised he wasn't going around with lemongrass fucking foot scrub on at this point. So Jess has changed for the occasion and looks as though Hulk Hogan and Where's Wally combined and charged through an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. For our American friends, Where's Waldo, I think is the equivalent. Not of RuPaul's Drag Race, of Where's Wally.
Thank you, okay.
There you go. Stood beside him is the always splendid Bobby the Brain Heenan. Sorry. Why? Why was that noise?
Sorry.
Explain, justify that noise.
It doesn't make it any better.
Okay. Heenan is introduced as the manager of the year, in Jess's opinion, and is asked about Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, who was originally part of the Heenan family. Bobby Clep, that would have made the show more entertaining.
Bit of Paul Orndorff.
I'd have taken prawn Orndorff. Oh, prawn Volivons. We're back on it again.
Oh, no.
Bobby claims that he made Orndorff a star and brought all of his abilities to the surface, and that is, and that it was true. Mr. Wonderful fired him on TV only because he knew Heenan was going to give him the heave-ho 30 seconds down the road. Jess asks about the bounty that Heenan put on Orndorff, and Bobby confirms he did... What? He did, as Mr. Wonderful wanted him out of wrestling, so the Brain returned the favour.
Mm-hmm.
All the while they're talking, that dickhead with the air horn continues to fire it off, and due to overuse, the thing now sounds like Free Willy being harpooned.
Honestly. Oh, the amount of things we've... So shit. Yep. The amount of things we fucking watched where people are allowed shit like this. Not even people in the crowd. Fucking whistles. All of this bullshit.
How's Bill Alfonso getting bullets here?
I don't care. But it's so irritating. How is someone getting into a venue with a freaking air horn?
I associate that with more the UK crowd as well in the 90s where you'd get air horns, but it never became too obnoxious, whereas this was just obnoxious.
This was irritating.
I'm sticking with obnoxious. It was horrendous. So really annoying. Pissed me
all
off.
All I wanted to do was watch Jesse, listen to Jesse, and all I can hear is this irritating fucking sound in my ears.
This little cunt just blowing this fucking air horn. That's to say what you wanted to say. Jess asks Heenan why he decided to up the bounty from 25k to 50k. The Brain says that it's hard to get some people to do anything for 25k. I'd do it. I've been kicked in the head more times than cousin fucker. And he wants this job doing. And he'd be thrilled to hand over the money to Roddy Piper should he be successful in his efforts later on.
Sure.
Heenan says Orndorff is not an intelligent man, but if he wanted some advice, he should take his shoes and trunks off, throw them in the ring, and just retire.
Naked?
Poor Orndorff.
Poor Orndorff.
There's a shirt. Poor Orndorff. Yeah, Poor Orndorff. Mean Gene interviews Mr. Wonderful. Back in the familiar surroundings of the entryway, Mean Gene is now stood beside Paul Orndorff, who just heard what took place on the body shop. Mr. Wonderful says that Heenan is the one that started all of this, and that Piper has no chance of beating him, as any man with a dress around his waist isn't man enough to get the bounty on his head. Orndorff asks what Piper would spend the money on. More dresses? Gene says plumbing. I guess because of the word pipe in Piper. And Orndorff makes a really shit plumbing joke that went so far over my head I didn't care to run it back. Bottom line, he's ready.
Whatever.
Gene says he doesn't know if Orndorff is mentally ready, but we'll find out shortly in the ring. We now see a fully robed Mr. Wonderful jog his way to the ring and scream that he wants Piper.
The thing that upsets me here is I actually like Mr. Wonderful.
Okay.
I actually like him.
Fine.
But I can't. I just can't do it.
On this show particularly?
This show in particular. And then all I do is look at his chiselled jawline and think, oh, he is literally the love child of a Ken doll mixed with Joe from Family Guy.
That's a great shout.
That's all I can think
that
when I look at him.
That's a great fucking shout.
Thank you.
Really good.
Thank you.
We now see Hot Rod stood beside Mean Gene, and he's asked if he has concerns about Heenan's history of paying out on bounties, or more importantly, not paying out. Piper simply says, my thoughts on it is if Heenan doesn't pay out the 50k, I'll rip his throat out too. Just talking like,
I can't with his voice.
Hot Rod has a habit in his promos of sticking his finger in his ear, which to me was him trying to channel out the voices in his head before going on a mad tirade. He says that he's about to go and face a man covered in baby oil trying to make himself look pretty, but that Piper doesn't need oil to be pretty, and he doesn't need to tell people how tough he is because they already know. If Heenan doesn't pay up, Piper will go and collect it from the Brain's grandmother, if he has to. And he finishes talking with brudder. I notice he's starting to sound like Jimmy Snooker, with an accent for some reason. Brudder. Okay. Gene broaches the subject of Uncle Elmer's wedding, and Piper puts forward that in 12 years' time, we may have 5 more Uncle Elmers running around, and who needs that? But let me tell you this for free. If there are Elmers, they sure shit won't be running anywhere. Gene looks to gag as Piper finishes his thought and just walks off. Piper is the star performer for me on the night so far.
Really?
So far.
Wow, okay.
Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff versus Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Cool.
Holly, in this moment in time, Roddy Piper was the fucking man. We've spoken about how cool Razor Ramon was in the mid-90s and how cool Sean and Diesel thought they were, but I defy you to find me a man that oozes more natural charisma and coolness in 1985 in the world of professional wrestling than Rowdy Roddy Piper. He comes across natural like... Don't get me wrong, he would do the shouty promos as well, but the best promo work on the night so far by a mile is Piper just talking.
It's not a lot to compare it to, though.
It's not, but I just, as he was coming to the ring and the way he's carrying himself and everything, I'm just like... He's a cool guy.
Okay.
He is a cool guy. The bagpipes and drums play Hot Rod to the ring, and he walks with such a natural arrogance that you can't help but get invested one way or the other for me. As the marching band encircle the ring, Heenan has returned with his hands on the briefcase full of money as he calls for Piper's attention and we head to a commercial break. When we return, we see Piper enter the ring and make a run at Orndorff, and I can't help but be frustrated that both wearing blue trunks.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Which I know must have been a tough one for you as well, Holly.
Why? Like, just someone in wardrobe here, just... I know they both look different, stature-wise, but...
But Piper always wore blue, so for me this is an Orndorff thing.
Yeah, fine.
He even came out in a blue robe.
One of them, just have different colour pants, please.
For me, Orndorff and make it white.
Porndorff.
Or red, yeah.
Cool.
Poor Orndorff. Mr. Bumderful. Poor Orndorff. The two men begin trading wild blows as the opening bell sounds, which Mr. Wonderful starts to get the better of. Piper eats the top buckle before being whipped into the opposite corner, but he rebounds out and levels Orndorff with a clothesline. As the camera pans down, we can see the rubbish that has been thrown into the ring by the fans. Big running punt to the top of the head from Hot Rod, and he continues by driving the back of Orndorff's head into the canvas by holding onto his hair. Back to their feet, and Mr. Wonderful blocks a right hand and delivers a series of his own, but Piper won't give up and swings back. Orndorff now tackles Hot Rod to the canvas and unloads with a series of crushing left forearms before biting him as the ref is shouting the count of both men.
This, I had no fucking clue what was going on at that point. I thought, oh, okay, cheeky pash there.
They briefly return to their feet before they tackle each other to the canvas once more, and whilst this is far from pretty, it makes sense that a fight between these two men who hate each other would look this gritty.
Okay.
Logically, it makes sense. You wouldn't be going, oh, hip toss, arm drag, top wrist lock. You'd be like, I want to punch you in the face and tackle you to the ground.
Okay.
They continue to roll for position until Piper grabs Orndorff by the eyes from his back. Jess calls this a street fight, and he isn't far off in the traditional sense. DDT from Piper connects, and we have our first pro wrestling move of the match. A running stamp to the face of Mr. Wonderful, and a following right sends him through the ropes into the apron, from where Piper kicks him to the floor. On the outside, Piper drives Orndorff face first into the table but misses with a chair. He looks to plant his face on the table one more time, but Orndorff reverses, and it is Hot Rod who eats the wood, not once, but twice. Piper rolls back to the inside, and Mr. Wonderful tosses a chair into the ring but climbs the buckles and connects with a double axe handle to the top of the head, causing Piper to stanky leg his way around the ring.
Very good.
Big back suplex, which Jess incorrectly calls as the first wrestling move of the contest. Come on, Jess, get with the fucking program. Orndorff is fueling himself off the crowd and hits Piper twice, but the wily Scotsman simply pokes him calmly in the eye. Now, we know I'm not a fan of eye rakes or eye pokes, nor are you, Holly, to be fair.
Boring.
Hot Rod is allowed to do it like this. He is. He's the sunglass inside.
Your exception. Okay.
Yeah, just him going
okay,
like that. Fine. Do you know who does that now these days? Randy Orton. Oh, your facial expression changed there. Randy Orton does the exact same.
And you're okay with it, yeah?
I don't mind it because no one else does it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do it as good as Piper.
But
I'm not angry about it. We know the move that Randy Orton does that annoys me, which we don't need to go over again at this point. Where we go here. Big running knee lift by Piper, but both men are knocked down to the canvas after they collide in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Hot Rod recovers first and he crawls over to Orndorff, who he claws away at. Back to his feet, and Piper looks for a running splash, but Mr. Wonderful has the knees up, much to the delight of the crowd. Big clubbing arm by Orndorff, and he nearly knocks the ref flying as he hits the ropes and connects with a running crossbody that sends both men over the top and to the outside. Mm-hmm. Decent.
Yeah.
The wild brawl continues as the two men trade right hands. Piper picks up a chair and carelessly swings it at Orndorff, who manages to move out of the way. The ref continues his count as the two men battle towards the commentary position, and Orndorff smacks Hot Rod's head off the concrete floor. The bell has sounded. This one is over as a result of a double count-out. They crawl under the scaffold setup that has Vince and Jess sat calling the action, and the cameras follow them backstage, where we see Piper shut himself in a locker room as Orndorff pounds away on the door.
Mm.
Holly, what were your thoughts on this one? What were the scores?
I gave it 2 out of 5, because it's better than... It's better than the one I saw before, marginally, but I don't care. I'm not invested, and I like Mr. Wonderful, but also for me, it kind of the way it finished as well. I'm not a fan.
It's not the worst ending of the night.
Oh, I'm well aware.
So I gave it 2 stars as well. So I didn't think it was quite as good as the Hogan Volkoff match.
Oh yeah, because you scored that higher, didn't you?
Even though. Like I said, the grittiness of the match made sense.
Yeah.
It's not my type of match.
No.
So that's why I gave it 2 stars. But it's perfectly serviceable.
Yeah.
And again, we've seen the best two matches, arguably. Well, we'll see. I can't remember what I scored the last one, to be fair. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
As ready as you'll ever be.
Yeah.
We're now at the wedding ceremony, Holly. You love a wedding. God. At least your shoes didn't melt in this one.
I do love a wedding. Not a wrestling wedding.
We see Uncle Elmer's goofy ass standing in the middle of the ring as Gene begins tickling the ivories for the wedding march. But my God, does it sound more like something out of a horror movie.
Okay. First point. If you are actually getting married.
Yep.
Right. So I obviously Googled on this and they did legit get married. Not here, but backstage. But they're actually together. Put a fucking shirt on. Put a fucking shirt on. Honestly, livid. I was so angry. It's not the only person I'm fucking angry at, but I'll get there.
Okay. Okay, I'm just going to... Jamie's sending us messages while we're doing this. I'll just get that out of the way. Elmer is wearing a short sleeve shirt under his overalls and has a tie slapped on, which feels like polishing a dog turd to me.
That is also not a shirt. A short sleeve shirt to get married.
It's a short sleeve what?
Short sleeve shirt to get married.
At least he had sleeves. Some of the other fuckers didn't have sleeves there.
Someone only had pants on.
Yeah. Go on, Andre.
Oh.
The soon-to-be Mrs. Elmer, who I'm still unaware of her actual name. Oh no, Jess mentions her name is Joyce.
Yeah, my grandma's name.
Oh, very nice.
Yep.
Makes her way to the ring. This wasn't your grandma?
Not that I'm aware of, no. She did fucking like wrestling, so wouldn't have been surprised.
Not that much. I think there's a limit.
Does anyone?
There's a fucking limit. She makes her way to the ring as her excessive trail is being carried by two young girls.
Mm.
The pink stairs that have been erected by the ring lead the way for the bride, and Hogan and Andre stood either side to stand on the bottom rope and raise the middle for Joyce to step in the squared circle.
So,
Andre's in his pants.
I'm so angry.
Hogan's in a sleeveless tuxedo shirt and dicky bow.
It's so funny.
And a weightlifting belt. What the fuck was he expecting to kick off?
Honestly, that Hogan's outfit for me was so funny. Like, it was on character.
He's in the running, I tell you.
But then all I do is look left and go, why the fuck is Andre there? But you know, he got paid extra to be in that wedding ceremony.
Love that.
Section. He got paid main event money.
Love that.
To just do that.
Yeah, fucking absolutely. Get
and
what you can.
Obviously, he didn't have time after this to get changed for his match, so he's just there in his fucking pants.
Yeah.
Fucking pissed out.
Brilliant.
So if I got married and someone turned up in pants and wrestling boots, you ain't coming in.
Oh.
You're safe. I'm very much so single, so
well,
it's fine.
I was going to say, but what if? Okay, how about this?
What if? Okay.
Let's say we were getting married and I was at the art and I'm wearing just like wrestling gear.
No.
No?
No.
Well, okay.
No.
That changes things then for me. What about a Seth Rollins-esque attire?
Yeah, fine.
Brilliant.
Here for it.
I could get, yeah, okay. Fucking I could 100% pull that off. Okay.
Right.
Vince says that she appears to be hesitating, having seen Hogan and Andre, and then looked back at Elmer, but he cuts his thoughts short as he mentions the cute girls carrying the trail. The Master of Ceremonies begins the service, and I now notice that to complete the cast of Misfits, we see Lou Albano.
Oh, yeah.
Jess makes a joke about Elmer supporting Joyce, but he doesn't know how she can support him. Elmer can't even follow the lines he's been given, as instead of to respect and to love, he says to expect and love. And Jess shouts, expect what? On commentary. Jess is a gift in this.
Isn't he just?
The guy can't read and now he can't hear either. At this moment, something hits the canvas and bounces back up, knocking the veil sharply. I have no clue what that was. And Jess laughs, saying it's a sign from the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes time to exchange the rings, Jess asks, is it fingers or noses?
Jesus.
Jess asks, oh no, we've done that. Big Man really struggles to get the ring on her finger, and she actually looks in pain at certain points as he ham-fists his way through forcing it over the knuckle. I give you this, I can't hear you. This absolutely breaks Jess on commentary and Vince asks him to stop. When the minister asks if there are any objections, Elmer points over his shoulder and now we see Hot Rod with a mic making his way to the ring. Piper says there's no room for romance in wrestling and he objects. I celebrated and I couldn't agree more with him.
Yeah.
There is no place for a wedding during a wrestling match, but I wasn't aware there was a match taking place if I'm honest. But though, I mean, to be fair, Andre was ready for shit to go down. Piper says the whole wedding stinks. I put the who wedding because I didn't realise he was in fucking The Grinch. The whole wedding stinks and Hogan steps between the ropes to warn Hot Rod, who turns and walks backstage having made a scene.
Mm-hmm.
The minister now pronounces them man and wife, and the husband and wife share a disturbingly long kiss.
Yeah, it was a bit longer than I'd like.
She maybe has a bit of barbecue sauce just in the corner of her mouth, and he was like...
licking that one.
Yeah, lick it. Well, let's see where else she puts it later on. They make their way to leave the ring, and Elmer exits over the top rope before raising his arms in the air in celebration, and Vince shouts, "You did it, Elmer!" from commentary. Story time.
Okay.
You kind of already answered this, but Holly, did you know that this was a real wedding? Stanley Fraser, a.k.a. Uncle Elmer, and real-life girlfriend Joyce got married during the recording of the second edition of Saturday Night's main event on NBC. Yes, it was filmed as an angle, but the marriage was real, and the story never went anywhere beyond that. Elmer stuck around in the Federation until shortly after WrestleMania 2 before leaving the company. Sadly, 6 years later, on 1st of July 1992, Stanley would pass away as a result of kidney failure, which was brought on by his diabetes and weight-related issues. And I also saw that Joyce actually passed away in 2004, 2006, so she's now no longer with us as well. I thought it was strange, because I would have just assumed it was an absolute sham.
Yeah.
The whole way through.
Well,
so
because all the others,
me.
I think, we've seen have been. But yeah, I Googled and it was like, they actually got married again backstage, like, legit. But I don't know, like, I understand the angle because...
What a woman, by the way.
I see. Yeah, I know. Because I understand, like, they said that this was the first time there'd been a wedding on TV since 1968, I think. So I get it. And also, I suppose you're trying to pull in, it's a Saturday night. You're trying to pull in more people.
The casual viewers.
Let's pull in some, you know, let's throw a bit of romance in there and see who we can get. But no, no thanks.
Yeah, it depends what kind of romance you want to see, really.
Not this.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have happily had it not there at all, personally.
Yes.
I'm with Roddy Piper on that.
Cut the show down by 20 minutes.
Oh,
and get rid of this.
Absolutely.
Oh, and actually cut it down by another half an hour for all the other shite that is entailed with all of this.
So what you're
Let's
basically
just not
saying,
have a show.
There it is.
Yeah.
That you've nailed it. We go back to the reception venue. We see the reception area has been made up to look like a makeshift barn with piglets and chickens loose around the room. Jess says that he can see the friends and family arrived early. Holly, ever fancied having a wedding reception in a barnyard with loose animals?
No.
Don't invite your family then.
Come on! Yeah, fucking wrong.
Sorry, had to be done.
It's okay.
I'm well aware that every single member of your family could probably kick my ass. Mean Gene interviews Heenan, Bundy and Stud. Gene says that you couldn't help but be moved by the ceremony, but Heenan says he will tell him later what moved instead. Heenan calls Gene Piano Keys and asks him what he was doing beating on his organ like that.
Oh, I see.
Gene says he asks the questions around here and puts it to the group what they have against Andre the Giant. Stud shouts that he's the original giant of wrestling and Bundy is the second, which makes Andre the third. Bundy says that Andre has been running roughshod for a long time and it's about time it was brought to an end.
He ain't been fucking running nowhere.
No, exactly. Stud begins shouting again, saying Andre has... said he slammed him, but nobody can slam him, and reminds Andre that he was the man that cut his hair.
I just don't care.
Gene apologises to Heenan if he didn't like the organ work. The Brain says, here on NBC they have the big peacock. Well, in a few minutes you're about to see a 500-pound turkey go down. Good line, Heenan. Very good line.
I'll give him that. That was funny.
Andre heads to the ring.
Oh.
After we come back from the commercial break, Andre the Giant and Tony Atlas are making their way to the ring, and Vince can't help but sing the praises of the Giant. Jess agrees, but caveats that Stud and Bundy have already bettered Andre in the past at the Maple Leaf Gardens, and we're now shown footage of what Jess is referring to. With Stud lying his weight on Andre's legs, Bundy continues to hit the ropes and splash the Giant, with even Heenan trying to assist the Omelet in getting momentum off the cables.
Mm-hmm.
Time for the match.
Yay, can't wait.
King Kong Spud. And Big John Stud. No. Oh, it's because... Oh, that is brilliant. King Kong Spud and Big John Stud. That's it.
Wow.
With Bobby Heenan versus Andre the Giant and Tony Atlas with Lou Albano.
Cool.
I'll be perfectly upfront with you on this one, Holly. I'm not expecting a masterpiece.
No, me neither.
Andre and Bundy look to start off, and it's scary that Egoland looks as small as he does against the Giants.
Yep.
Bundy goes to tie up, but Andre has him by the throat and looks panicked as he's being marched towards the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
From one choke to another, Andre is now choking Bundy from behind in the middle of the ring. With Bundy backed into the corner, the Giant drives his thick frame backwards to crush him against the buckles before returning to choke the quiche with his singlet strap. In a bizarre move, Andre grabs both Bundy's head and his own partner's head under his arms and delivers a double noggin knocker.
Now, I enjoy a double noggin knocker, but why are you using your partner's head?
Because apparently Tony Atlas can withstand it. He must be Samoan or something. Thankfully, Atlas is unfazed and is tagged into the contest. The two men tie up and Atlas finds himself whipped off the ropes and back elbowed to the canvas, but he's alert and rolls free of the elbow drop attempt that follows. Mm-hmm. Leaping headbutt by Atlas, you'll notice a theme of these, and Bundy staggers into his own corner, allowing Stud to tag in. The big man grabs a headlock but is shoved to the ropes. On his return, he shoulder tackles Atlas to the canvas. However, his second attempt sees Tony impressively leapfrog him and then hit a leaping headbutt on the second pass.
I'll give the leapfrog its due. That was very good.
I'll be honest, not to spoil the score for this match, all the points, or lack thereof, Tony Atlas is the one that gets them.
100%.
A couple of right hands and another headbutt by Atlas, who looks for a body slam, but they are too close to the ropes and Stud simply holds on. Although you can tell from the power of Tony, he could have body slammed him easily.
For sure.
Stud hits a couple of strikes in the corner, but finds his whip off the ropes reversed. Atlas looks for a drop kick, but Stud hangs onto the ropes, causing him to miss. He also narrowly avoids Andre's attempt at grabbing his hair. Now, Andre and Stud genuinely didn't like each other.
Okay.
Stud was scared of Andre.
Really?
And the reason, I think what it all stemmed from is I think Andre thought Stud was a bit too arrogant and he didn't like the fact that Stud used to come into the ring over the ropes.
That was his thing.
Yeah, Andre was the giant and to him that was him. Although, I noticed he was at the wedding when Elmer went over the top rope. I noticed that as well. So there's a lot of heat between these two, and John Studd eventually left the company because he's like, I think he's going to try and kill me.
Wow.
Elbow dropped by the big man, who now stamps away on Atlas before taking a run at Andre, who meets him with a meaty headbutt.
Mm.
Meanwhile, Bundy has hit the ring and connects with a running splash on Atlas. Studd returns to stomping on Atlas, but it doesn't prevent him from making the tag to Andre. The giant thinks about stepping over the ropes, but pauses, and the two giants lock eyes. When he does enter the ring, notably by the second rope, he slowly walks Stud down, who backs off looking concerned. When they do meet, it's an awkward tussle to the ropes, where Andre opens with some rights to the kidneys. A big headbutt and chop follows before the giant returns to his choking ways. Whip and big boot send Stud to the outside, and Andre didn't look like he was going to fall over, so that's good.
Yeah.
Allowing Bundy to blindside the giant in the ring. King Kong Flan works over the sternum of Andre, focusing on the weakened area, while Stud runs Atlas back first into the ring post on the outside.
Drink.
With both heels in the ring, Andre finds himself in the corner, and Flambe hits a weak running splash before Stud joins in on the fun. A double noggin knocker from the giant only marginally slows them down, but the crowd erupts as Hulk Hogan has run to the ring. Worth noting, by the way, the ref has thrown this match out. As Hulk, still wearing his sleeveless shirt and dickie bow from the wedding, is throwing strikes at both Stud and Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
Just, oh dear.
Yeah.
The heels begin to get overwhelmed and take their leave as we head to a commercial break. Holly, what did you think of that match?
I thought it was shit.
You'd be correct.
I gave it 1 out of 5, and that is for the leapfrog. And actually, anything else that Atlas did, I enjoyed.
0.5 stars?
Honestly.
My reasoning is exactly the same.
Thank God it wasn't that long.
Well, exactly. I knew it was going to end in a schmoz finish as well.
Schmoz?
Schmoz, yeah.
Oh, fancy.
As we come back from the commercial, Mean Gene in the ring now as we return and ask Hulk Hogan what compelled him to come to the ring. The Hulkster says that he came to the ring because Andre and Atlas were the clear winners of the match and to prevent them from taking a beating unjustly.
Mm.
Mean Gene says that there is a lot more going down, but Hogan says that there is, but they don't want to tell us what it is right now and they just leave. Okay, that's weird.
The only thing I took from that was actually looking at Tony Atlas. I know he's jacked.
Yeah, he's a freak.
But his traps are so big. He has no neck.
It's like two heads coming out of his
shoulders.
It's
so weird. Like, I knew he was jacked before, but you know when you properly look, because I obviously wasn't listening to Hulk. So I was like, bloody hell, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, really good. I'll be honest, Holly.
Oh.
This next segment,
yeah,
I love, and I'm so sorry.
Cool.
I'm so sorry. We're now taken to an incredibly surreal video package where a tiger-striped jeep looks to have pulled in front of a forest and out steps Jungle Gene Okerlund, who's dressed like Richard Attenborough from Jurassic Park. He says he's here to study the world's most cunning and elusive creature. It isn't Bigfoot. It isn't the Loch Ness Monster. And it isn't Judge Crater. Who's Judge Crater?
I don't fucking know.
On August the 6th, 1930, who's Judge Crater? On August the 6th, 1930, New York Supreme Court Judge Joseph Force Crater vanished on the streets of Manhattan near Times Square. The dapper 41-year-old's disappearance launched a massive investigation that captivated the nation, earning Crater the title of the missingest man in New York. News of Crater's disappearance broke on September 3rd, triggering a dramatic manhunt and investigation. The missing judge's suspicious behaviour in the days leading up to his disappearance spawned rampant speculation that he had fled the country with a mistress or been a victim of foul play. His sensational story captured so much media attention that the phrase "pulling a Crater" briefly entered the public vernacular as a synonym for going AWOL. Comedians, meanwhile, seized upon the unsolved case as fodder for their stand-up routines, using the line "Judge Crater, call your office" as a standard gag. At his wife's request, Joseph Force Crater was declared legally dead in 1939. In 2005, New York police revealed that new evidence had emerged in the case of the city's missingest man. A woman who had died earlier that year had left a handwritten note in which she claimed that her husband and several other men, including a police officer, had murdered Crater and buried his body beneath a section of the Coney Island boardwalk. That site had been excavated during the construction of the New York Aquarium in the 1950s, long before technology existed to detect and identify human remains. As a result, the question of whether Judge Crater sleeps with the fishes remains a mystery.
Oh, okay. There's a problem with that story. It's more fucking interesting than the whole entire program we're watching.
How fucking interesting is that?
Yeah.
I know, because I was like, who the hell's Judge Crater? So I had to look it up. Because if there's a reference, I don't get.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's far more interesting than the wrestling.
So yeah, he was put in as the Supreme Court judge.
Wow.
And he made a claim that he was going to crack down on organised crime.
Oh, and then all of a sudden, poof.
Disappears.
Wow.
There you go.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's the story that I told my missus.
That
and she was like, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that is.
So now we get the reference of Judge Crater. I'm sure, you know, some of our American listeners might be familiar with that, but I assume a lot of the UK side of things, and maybe international audience,
Scooby.
Yeah, wouldn't have had a clue, so hopefully I've shed some light on it for you. But back to the video package. Gene is referring to George the Animal Steel and goes to try and find him in the wild. And by the wild, he means Detroit Zoo. I know Detroit's rough, but holy shit. That's a bold claim. He does find him. George is staring at the camels, shouting, "Yes, George, that's a camel," Gene says as he closes in. We now see footage of what happened at the end of...
Sorry.
It's alright, it scared the shit out of me.
Sorry. Oh,
we now see footage of what happened at the end of SNME Episode 1, where Steel was turned on by his tag partner, Sheikh and Volkov, which you'll remember.
Yes, I do.
From there, Captain Lou got George some shock therapy that briefly worked, and we see him having been zapped, saying, "How now, brown cow?" before he relapses. Back at the zoo, and Gene asks George to take him to see some of the other animals.
Mm-hmm.
Gene points out the elephant Maximus, aka the elephant, and he notices that it is of the Asiatic variety. George then mimics an elephant.
Mm.
They then see a tiger, and Gene asks George what type of tiger it is. What type of tiger is it? George says, "Detroit." And Gene thinks he might be right, as the Detroit Tigers have been very sleepy this season.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball gag.
Yeah.
We then see Bobby Heenan's face photoshopped onto a lemur after it's commented on as looking halfway between a monkey and a weasel. All we hear George says, "Good tail." Thanks, George. Now we find that this is everything. This bit is tremendous.
this gave.
Now we find the two at the hippo enclosure, where George says, "Bundy." And Gene agrees that their training regimes are similar, as well as a physical resemblance.
Yeah.
After completing their day release from the sanitarium, Gene says it was an honour to go around the zoo with George, and he can't wait to see him back in the ring. George shouts, "Bye," before running into a long grass and turning to stare at the camera.
I wish people could see you, that you just did that.
Holly, what do you think of that segment?
No.
I don't care about your comments on any other segment. I need it for this.
It was so ridiculous that it was amusing. No, it's not.
Better.
No, it's not.
It was honestly. I was nearly crying with laughter. I think I was delirious.
It did tickle me, but I just want it all over.
Well, I'm glad you should say that, because we have reached the main event of the evening.
Oh my god.
She nearly did a cartwheel there, ladies and gentlemen. I know you can't see it, but wow. Leaping Lanny Poffo, Antonio Guerrero versus Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus Beefcake with Luscious Johnny Valiant.
Fucking Greg Valentine.
We briefly see the challenger standing waiting in the ring for the tag team champions to arrive. And Holly, do you remember who Lanny Poffo is?
Oh, no.
The Genius. That's Randy Savage's brother.
Oh my gosh. Yes, thank you.
The brother is Beverly.
Love that.
Before they do head to ringside, we see the tag champs and their manager with Gene Okerlund in the entryway.
Mm-hmm.
Gene asks the champs how they feel about competing against somewhat of an unknown quantity in the challenges for the night. Valentine says they're the tag team champions and are prepared to take on anyone, including Mean Gene. As Gene tries to de-escalate the situation, Valiant teases lighting his stash on fire. Also,
yeah.
I don't know if you heard this, to be fair, in the recording, as they were interviewing them, when Greg starts talking, I hear you boo. And I'm so confused how that managed to come through the time-space continuum.
I thought we'd seen the back of him. I'm sorry. I'm sure he's was a lovely person. I don't know. I've seen enough of him to last me a lifetime.
Gene mentions the former tag team champions, the US Express, and takes us back to footage of the Knot Barber attacking Barry Windham's eyes with a foreign object.
Mm-hmm.
As we return, Gene sends us to a commercial break. Once that bit of business is done, all four men are stood in the ring and the match is underway. Leaping Lanny does have a very similar physique to that of his brother, and he's the man to square off against the Hammer to start things off. They briefly lock up and break. The second lock-up sees Valentine quickly strike with a forearm and chop down on the back of the neck. A flurry of strikes leads to a snapmare takedown and then a side headlock takedown from the Hammer. In a very creative escape, Lanny bridges up, marches into a handstand and rolls out the back for a hammerlock.
Love that.
Yeah, really good.
Love that.
We see the US Express sat at ringside cheering on the challengers and Windham is in pirate cosplay, I assume because of the heinous attack to his eye. Shot to the midsection by the Hammer, who body slams Poffo and makes the tag to Brutus. Valentine restrains Poffo, but he kicks Beefcake to the gut and strikes away at the Hammer. Hip toss for Brutus and a drop kick in short order. Body slam by Poffo, who leaps to the top rope and takes flight with a moonsault in 1985 in the WWF. Fuck off, what?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
See, I'm someone who's regularly shat on the Genius, but do you know what? On a card like this, thank you, Lanny. Thank you. He hooks the leg, but the Hammer breaks up the pin. Brutus off. There's no way Brutus could have been allowed to kick out of that either, because that's so spectacular for what anything they've seen.
Yeah.
He hooks the leg, Hammer breaks up the fall, and then Brutus offloads with some strikes before taking Lanny back to the corner and bringing the Hammer back into the fold. Double team drives Poffo back first into the buckles, but he tries to crawl his way to his own corner, but is cut off. Lanny tries to crescent kick his way free, but is still dragged back into the corner of the champs, and Brutus is now the legal man. Delayed big body slam by Beefcake only gets a one, and Lanny springs into life and leaps to tag in Tony Guerrero. Guerrero, a former tag team champion in his own right, and he would later become an agent for WWF behind the scenes, opens up with strikes. He whips Brutus into the buckles and hip tosses him back out. Drop kick for Brutus and one for the Hammer. Running cross body to Brutus gets a near fall. Guerrero misjudges a corner charge and runs right into a back elbow from Beefcake and takes a fall like a man who's just stubbed his toe and then slipped on a toy car. I was getting vibes from Home Alone.
Where he
steps and then goes, straight on his back. Valentine now tagged in and he hits a running elbow drop before signalling for the figure four leg lock. The hold is fully applied and with nowhere to go, Tony is forced to verbally submit and the tag champions have retained their crown.
Mm-hmm.
The bell sounds and the hold is not broken. Lanny runs in but is met by Brutus, who just dumps him to the outside before focusing his energy on stamping away at Guerrero. Now content with the damage they have done, the champions raise their titles high into the air. I haven't written a star rating for this one, but I can give it one based off what I saw, but I'll pass over to you. What did you think of the match? What did you score it?
2 out of 5. 2 out of 5. And I don't feel like actually I can not say any reason why not. It's just, it was all right. Yeah. And actually there were some moves in there. Really enjoyed that early reversal. Cheeky moves. Lovely. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Lanny Poffo was the star of this match.
By far.
Also, when you actually look at the matches on the card, granted you gave the Hogan one a lower rating and that Elmer thing was a non-match.
Yes.
The matches weren't horrendous.
They shouldn't have been on paper.
But like, I mean, the Andre one was really bad, actually. I take that back. The Elmer one I don't include as a match when I should, and the Andre match was crap. But the other ones, mm-hmm. how many were there? Three? Outside yeah. of that? Fine.
Okay.
But the overall show really, really suffered. But we're not done yet.
It's not finished.
We are not done yet.
Calm down.
We're now, Holly, at the wedding reception.
Brilliant.
Oh, fuck me. Here I was thinking the show was finished, but no. We are in the barn to see Uncle Elmer's wedding celebration. Mean Gene says that after commercial break, we'll see what the reception has to offer. As we return, Vince and Jess have joined a table with Hogan and Mr. Wonderful, and God help me, Jess is the star of the piece once more.
He brings this home. This is honestly ridiculous. Don't need anyone else for this.
I don't know about you, Holly, but to me, this is his best gear of the night.
Yeah.
Leather jacket, ridiculous hat, and red shades.
Yeah.
Jess is grumbling about being there, and when asked what he's doing, says he's writing a poem.
Mm-hmm.
Vince asks Hogan what he thought of the wedding, and as Hulk answers, Jess is still pissing and moaning the whole time about the state of the food.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good. And in my head, I couldn't work out if Hogan and Wonderful actually genuinely get annoyed by it.
Orndorff does, I think.
It's so funny.
You can tell Hogan can just power through, whereas Orndorff, you can tell, is like, it's actually putting me off a bit here.
It's so funny.
Orndorff is then asked the same question, and Jess continues to moan, saying that if it wasn't for the contract, he wouldn't be here at all. Jess tells Vince that he dressed down for this affair and went with the Keith Richards look of comfortably wasted.
Yeah, fair.
Gene is standing at another table where Captain Lou is sat with Cousin Fucker, and Lou tells Gene that he's teaching Cousin how to eat. But let me tell you this, nobody needs to tell that tubby bitch how to eat. He knows how to eat.
Oh, of course he does. But, you know, I like the logic behind it. Always eat with the left hand.
Keep the right hand clean.
So your right hand's clean to meet people with.
Captain Lou continues to prattle on about etiquette, and Gene rightly walks off to leaping Lanny Poffo, who didn't have time to change, so he sat there in his pants, and he takes the microphone to recite a poem of his own.
So fucking stupid.
I was going to write the poem down so I could recount it for you, but I just had to put, as soon as I went to pause, so I went to listen to it, and then yep. I was going to rewind it and write it down. But I hadn't hit pause quick enough as Gene starts tapping the glass with the fork and it shatters.
Shatters.
And I know he's just acting, but the reaction for him looked genuine, and that was good.
Yeah, it was funny. But also my request for if I ever get married, if I ever have a wedding reception, no one needs to see nipples at a wedding reception. He just sat there in his pants.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, whatever you do at your wedding, I mean, that's your call really, isn't it? So, yeah, he goes, I was going to write it down, cutlery shattered and he genuinely looked like he pooped himself a bit, which made me laugh. Gene now brings in the best man, Hillbilly Jim, although he nearly says groom and then he apologises for it, and asks him for about the 20th time on the night his thoughts on the wedding, and I couldn't get left less of a fuck if I tried.
Mm-hmm.
Hillbilly, I'm sure you're a nice man, you have kind eyes. I do not need to hear your fucking no opinion to this. There's no opinion. Stop asking him for his opinion on this thing where he's got no opinion.
I love how angry you are about it. It's so funny.
Fucking shit. Specifically asking him.
Yeah.
The same question every time. Anyway, I'm fine. Thankfully, Jim decides to give a toast instead.
Mm.
Although I still don't care. Mean Gene, or put Merrin Gene, now welcomes us to his very close, long-time personal friend, Tiny Tim, who looks all kinds of troubled. He looks like a children's entertainer that is legally not allowed to be within 100 yards of schools.
I said I felt like I need to be on something to understand this.
The man goes to give advice on marriage right after admitting his own did not work out, and he hands Elmer a ukulele as a wedding gift. Elmer says he loves it, which is the first time he's nailed one of his lines. Better late than never, I guess. Before the actual bluegrass band can begin to play, Jess strolls up to take centre stage and now regales us with a poem of his own.
This is everything.
There is always a place in life for love. A place for the lily, a place for the dove. There is always a time in life to care, a time to cuddle, a time to share. Yes, a time and place for everything, a place to dance and a time to sing. Now I've seen your dance and I've heard your song, and I must tell you that this is wrong. That wrestling is a deadly dance and is no partner to romance. And shame on those who ever did mix wrestling and romance just for these hicks. With that, Orndorff takes his jacket off, and he and Hogan make a move for Jess. As the body walks away, he's tripped by Hillbilly Jim and falls face first into the wedding cake. This makes it the second time a Saturday night's main event has ended with a person falling in cake.
Thank you.
Must be. See, I'll be honest, the comedy in this part was actually better, way better than it was at Cyndi Lauper's. But the cake shit from that one was better than the cake shit from this one. Because Moolah falling on a fucking
that was
band
actually
cake.
Hilarious.
Brilliant. It must have been in like an NBC contract. You've got to
you
have
a cake to fall in cake.
Yep. After we return from commercial, we see Vince announce that Heenan has accepted the terms for a very special tag team match between Bundy and Stud against Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. Hogan says, imagine how wild Hulkamania can run with an extra 500 pounds of meat stood in his corner.
Mm.
Vince then confirms that this match... Imagine Andre going, I'm just meat. Cool. Thanks. Brilliant. No wonder he turned on him going into WrestleMania 3. Vince then confirms that this match will headline the very next Saturday night's main event, and we head to a final commercial.
Yes.
As we return, Vince says he hopes everyone has enjoyed the festivities, and he welcomes everyone to join them for the next Saturday night's main event in 1 month's time.
Oh, do we have to?
As he walks off screen and the credits roll, we see Elmer dancing with his bride, and all the wedding guests join in with the dancing.
Oh, it's great.
It is, as much as I hated the wedding shit.
Yes.
There was a bit of humour in that final segment.
Yes, thank God.
And knowing that, obviously, Elmer died about 6 years after this, and his wife passed away, that nice sad. Moment where they just have a little kiss at the end, weirdly, pulls on the old heartstrings.
No, it does. It does hit you in the feels a little bit, but I fully agree with Jesse.
Has no place in wrestling.
No.
I agree.
A cheeky bit of romance, fine, but not actual wedding. And I'd be interesting to know, of all the weddings, in inverted commas, that have taken place on telly, for wrestling, how many have them ended with people falling in cake? Because I'd say there's a fair few.
The Savage one didn't.
Good.
As far as I'm aware.
I don't know. I've not done that.
But it did have another turning point and led to his feud.
Okay.
With a certain Mr. Roberts.
Okay. But a lot of others.
Yeah.
You know. Just putting it out there.
And usually it's awful. I just vividly remember Lana falling in cake.
Yeah.
That one I remember, but that wasn't a wedding. Was it wedding? Mm-hmm. It was wedding, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh, I think she's fallen in cake more than once.
Was that not the wedding where... Is it Ciampa that does the... Oh, no, it's not Ciampa. It's Hendry that's doing the...
Yes.
Voice on it.
Joe Hendry. Yeah. And you believed back then as well.
Always.
So, Holly, what was your overall takeaway on this show?
Oh, it was great. When it finished,
this was for me. Dire. I'll let you go into your bit in a sec. But for me, even though it was one of the shorter shows we've done, this was an absolute slog for me to work my way through.
Yep.
Mainly because it was so many quick cuts from one thing to the other, and with the way my note taking style is, I have to write it down.
Yeah.
So whereas I would have been better off for a 60-minute match that I could have then just ploughed my way through.
Okay.
This didn't allow for that.
No.
And it felt. I'll be honest. I really enjoyed this recording. Which lessens the blow on actually having to watch it. Because that was the first time it felt painful to me.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. It was shit.
Yeah.
So bad. Considering how short it is, and considering, right, say for example, like I recently watched Progress, right, which was 3 hours 45?
Yeah, it was.
In 2 days.
Yep.
This took me 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an hour.
Yep.
Like
an hour and six, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I gave it a 1.25 out of 10 because there were some tiny little parts or some, you know, people that actually made it all right. There was a little bit of comedy in there. I don't ever want to watch that again.
I agree, and I don't either. And weirdly, the comedy, normally when they try and do comedy, for you specifically, it doesn't land.
No,
it
doesn't.
Most of the comedy that they attempted on this was decent.
It had to.
Yeah, it really had to carry it. So my scoring isn't much better than yours. It's 1.5.
Yep.
And God help me if I find a show that rates lower than this for me.
Yeah.
It's nice because it's done out of the journey. And I think in terms of Saturday night's main event, and I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, but I think this is probably the worst one we're going to see.
Okay.
I'm hoping that's correct.
Okay.
Some people out there might disagree and shed some light on it and make me cry.
Oh.
But I'm hoping that's the worst one in the rearview mirror. But I did enjoy this recording because some of the back and forth on it was quite entertaining.
Yep.
Holly.
Yeah.
Your segment time.
Well, I mean, I feel like we've already touched upon it slightly.
Were there any also-rans?
Who?
Also-rans, like people that were in the contest but never going to win it.
Some honourable mentions.
Honourable mentions, yeah.
Hulk's wedding outfit.
I knew that was going to be there. Yeah.
It made me chuckle. And you know what? I was disappointed with Brutus.
His tights were right, I thought.
But I don't feel like we got a... Because when they did the interview, he stood behind. You don't really see. But it's also not as flamboyant. There's no grenades.
No, but yet. He's got the...
He's
the
getting there.
Two-tone. So there's one yep. that's slightly see-through, but
so
no
he gets
tassels.
A, gets an honourable okay, honourable mention. Enough. We'll give the wedding dress an honourable mention.
That's fair. Didn't consider that.
You know, that's apparently... That costs like between $7,000 and $8,000. So, you know.
Not money back then. How the fuck did Elmer afford that?
Well, I'm... pretty sure he didn't but thanks but obviously the man, if you're going to give me a show like this that has Jesse in it that changes multiple times, he's going to win it hands down.
You're
so...
going to have a problem.
Oh no,
imagine shows when we get Jess and Savage.
Oh no
there'll be a 30 minute segment of Holly talking between the pros and cons of the outfits of the two men.
So yeah, obviously I think people saw it coming. Jesse is the overall winner.
Was the third one your favourite?
Yes by agreed. far.
Yeah, by far. The first one was a bit mad.
Yeah, but even if he hadn't changed, he still would have won it.
Fine. I'm not angry at that.
No.
Okay, so before we walk off into the sunset, yeah. Have you got the socials to share with the lovely listeners out there?
I don't, but I'm going to try and remember them.
Oh, you're going to freeball it?
I'm going to try. The email, because you took the piss out of me last time, wintwicepod@gmail.com.
And what can they do there?
Email you.
With...
whatever they like.
Well, let's...
recommendations, suggestions, thoughts, yeah. feelings.
Yeah, I can be an agony aunt. I do it enough at work.
Why not? All right. You're not wrong.
Tell me when I'm lying, yeah.
And then every other social is Win Twice Pod.
Yep, so that's Insta, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, YouTube.
A YouTube.
TikTok, although we haven't actually touched TikTok for a while because that started being funny. But
I
think we're, still... positively ploughing through. I don't know where I was going with that sentence, but I started it, so I'll finish it.
Alright.
Well, hopefully, even though the episode or the subject matter itself was atrocious, you guys have had a good old time listening along to us go through several stages of grief, I think it's fair to say, in the analysis of this one. But I've had a lovely time, Holly. I hope you have as well.
Oh, it's been a treat.
And until the next time, everyone, take care.
Bye.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.